Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
This is Enduring It Well, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This mortality is filled with the condition of being susceptible to harm or injury. The dictionary calls that condition danger. We are all exposed to danger at some time during our mortal sojourn. None are exempt from its reaching influence. Danger comes in many forms and can enter our lives quickly without warning, or sneak up on us slowly, subtly gripping us almost undetected. Either way, danger can present challenges that have long-lasting, even eternal ramifications. Danger can present itself to us physically, revealing the fragile nature of our mortal existence here, or it can come to us spiritually, with the potential of affecting our future status in the next stage of the great plan of salvation. Despite the varied ways that danger can enter and affect our lives, the greatest security given to Heavenly Father's children is the reality of the atoning sacrifice by the Son of God in our behalf. As the pastor Robert Robinson penned in the 1757 Christian hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, quote, He, to rescue me from danger, interposed His precious blood, close quote. As we come to understand our dependent nature on divine mercy, we will ask, as Robinson's lyrics so beautifully plead, to let thy goodness as a fetter bind my wandering heart to thee. Being fettered or shackled to the God we love can greatly lessen or remove completely the debilitating effects of danger. Welcome to Enduring It Well with host W.A. Christensen.
Natalie White of Highland, Utah, lives a charmed teenager's life. Everything has always gone her way. A naturally beautiful girl, Natalie has many friends, a loving family, and life is good. One seemingly small problem started to cause Natalie great personal concern. She noticed her life was becoming stressed by the social pressures associated with the new media tools so widely available today. She had become too focused on Facebook, texting, and other social media technology. It began to cloud her mind, as she put it. On her own, she went to her parents and handed over her phone and Facebook account. She willingly silenced the pressing social hum that was beginning to rule her life. Not long thereafter, strep throat went through the family one by one. But while the others all recovered, Natalie did not. In the doctor's office, they found a previously undetected murmur. Further tests showed that Natalie had a condition known as arterial septal defect, with a 24-millimeter hole in her heart. In fact, half of her heart was twice the size of the other half due to the extra exertion on one side. She was told that she was on the verge of major heart failure. In November 2011, Natalie underwent a cath closure through her femoral artery. It was unsuccessful. That December, Natalie was transported to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where she underwent full open-heart surgery. 6 weeks later, a time frame the surgeon predicted she would begin to feel better, Natalie found she could not move one leg without great pain to the calf. In a rare side effect, the artery had scarred from the heart-lung machine used during the surgery and was now collapsing. After reconstructive artery surgery, Natalie finally has begun to heal from the many medical procedures. She still faces future procedures, but now understands the source of true joy, has a greater appreciation for her life, and feels her heart has been healed spiritually as well as physically. Welcome to Enduring It Well, Natalie. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
So, Natalie, when did you first learn that your heart was failing you?
Well, early in August of last year, my whole family had strep throat, and about a week had passed, and everyone had gotten better except for me. And so my mom took me into the doctor for a second checkup, and that's where the nurse basically found a heart murmur.
And so from there, they wanted more tests. What did they do?
They did an echocardiogram.
And what did they find?
They found a hole in my heart.
And how big was that hole?
It was 24 millimeters, which is a little over the size of a quarter.
And from what I've learned in preparing for this episode today, that's about as large a hole as a person can have and still survive. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so what did you do and how did you feel when you realized you had a hole in your heart?
You know what? It's strange because I actually felt extremely at peace. My mom didn't feel, she was extremely worried, but I was actually, you know, thinking that somehow everything was going to be okay. And I don't know how I felt that way or.
Just right off the
yeah,
top?
Yeah, just right off the top. Mm-hmm.
So you went through these tests. In addition to the hole, what did they find out about the condition of your heart?
Well, one side of my heart was twice as big as the other side. So basically the blood was mixing. My heart was working twice as hard as it needs to, and it can't work that hard for very much longer.
And did you feel the effects of this, or did you just feel normal?
I felt pretty normal. I was, you know, a sleepy teenager, which I guess every teenager is. But they told us that sleepiness was a symptom, and shortness of breath was also a symptom that I was having, so I couldn't run very well. I could always feel my heart pounding against my chest, and when it was finally fixed, I couldn't feel that anymore. So, of course, before the surgery, I thought it was a normal thing that you could just, you know, feel your heart pounding against your chest.
So when you started to do some of those kind of activities, you would get exhausted.
Mm-hmm. And I felt like a loser. I felt like I just wasn't meant for PE and sports and stuff. I felt like I felt like I could be more, but for some reason my body wasn't letting me.
And that came right at a time in your life. Here you are in middle school when everybody wants to fit in and mm-hmm. you're feeling like you can't keep up.
Mm-hmm. All the girls were cheerleaders and they were all really active and I wasn't.
Did you feel isolated a bit from that?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So what did you do in school when you felt like you couldn't keep up and you felt a little awkward, a little different from the others? Was there anything you did or did you just have to go along with that?
Well, lucky for me, I was in drama. I kind of just tried to invest my whole personality into that so that I looked like, you know, of course I love drama, but I tried to also make it look like that's where I was. I wasn't a sports person. I was a drama mm-hmm. person.
And so all of that was happening before you got your diagnosis. And mm-hmm. then now the diagnosis comes.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer questions for you?
Yeah. I knew now why I wasn't getting a good time on the mile or, mm-hmm. you know, all those things.
And so now with that knowledge, did it frighten you at all?
Yes. Yes, it frightened me a lot. With symptoms, we would have known sooner.
And when things got serious like this, did that change your outlook a little bit on life when you suddenly realized my heart could literally stop?
Yeah, I told myself I wanted to be a better person if I lived through it.
Can you describe for me your prayers at this time, once you learned this news?
You know, besides praying for the success of the surgery, I prayed for my mom to have peace of mind because she's a big worrier. And that's probably the majority of what my prayers went to.
As you asked for her to have that peace, and as you felt those feelings for your mother and your family, knowing that they were worrying, did you get the comfort you needed?
I felt completely at peace, which was a huge blessing because I'm also a big worrier. The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Your family had to kind of adjust at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And parents of a child that is medically fragile suddenly become protective and become quite concerned and try to look for the what is the longevity, what are we up against. Did you feel them doing that, your mother and your father?
Yes, definitely. My mom would say things like, Natalie, don't do that, if I was, you know, jumping on the tramp, or be careful when you do this, because obviously we knew that, you know, something was wrong with my heart. So.
And while that was taking place, what was the plan for the doctors? What were they going to do then?
They planned to try a really non-invasive procedure where they would just stick a catheter through my leg and try and place a disc in the hole in my heart. And they knew before they tried this, there was a really low risk that it was going to be successful.
So you had that done. You had that done in Utah, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened?
It wasn't successful.
So you went in for surgery. Mm-hmm. Did they put you under?
Yeah, they put me under, and I woke up almost knowing that it had been successful. I hadn't even considered that it wouldn't, that maybe it wouldn't work. And I was really surprised to find that it didn't.
Were you disappointed?
I was, yeah, definitely.
How about your family? Was that hard?
My family was really disappointed too, yeah, because they knew what the next step was.
Which was?
Open heart surgery.
And so where did you have your open heart surgery?
At Mayo Clinic in Minnesota.
And how long after this first procedure, what was the time frame from that unsuccessful procedure to this new one now? What was the time frame?
A little under a month.
So now you have this month that you know it hadn't worked the first time. Frightened again?
Extremely frightened. I knew enough about open heart surgery to know that it wasn't, you know, a simple surgery. So I was definitely frightened.
Where did you get your peace when you're frightened like that?
Prayer, definitely. Prayer and the love and support from my family. And my family's become a really important, has become really important to me. Well, has grown in importance.
Where do you muster up the strength now to go in for this second one? Now you know the possibility that this is dangerous.
Well, I told my parents this, and if it's successful, then I'm lucky and I go on with life and I become a better person. But if it's not, then that's God's plan. And I just knew that whatever happened to me is what God wanted to happen with me, happen to me.
That takes a lot of faith, Natalie. Where did you get that faith?
Family. I've got a really supportive, really loving, really strong family that loves the church and the gospel. And I think that's probably where I draw the majority of my faith from.
Tell us what happened at the Mayo Clinic.
The night before my surgery, everything hit me pretty hard. I was actually really scared, and I can't really tell you why. The day of the surgery, I actually felt pretty good. Everyone was calm. Everyone was positive.
So, Natalie, when we go into surgeries, there's the prepping and all that process that you go through, and we live in a time when the doctors also need to give us the most blunt news of what the possibilities are, and they tell you this could happen, that could happen, and you're sitting there as a young teenager and you're hearing this. What did you feel when the doctor talked to you like that?
I was extremely scared and I was extremely overwhelmed because I hadn't heard this before. My parents had always kept the conversations private with the nurses and the doctors, and so it was actually the first time that I had heard what could actually happen.
And what did that feel like?
I was scared. I thought I was going to die. I still had faith that whatever happened is what was supposed to happen.
And so from there, they wheel you in.
Mm-hmm.
And
they wheeled me in. They put this funny little cap on me that had hot air balloons all over it with children riding in the hot air balloons. And the nurses, yeah, I still have it. And the nurses were super nice and they were super positive and they were taking my picture. And
let me just ask you, as you're wheeling away, what was the last thing you saw of your mother and your father?
I think they were standing together and told them I loved them, and they told me they loved me too.
Was that hard?
And yeah, it was kind of strange. It was almost like I was saying goodbye. They wheeled me into this bright white room with lots of doctors and shiny metal objects everywhere, and that's all I remember.
When you woke up, were you in physical pain at all?
Yes, I was in a lot of physical pain. I had a little morphine button, and they said, press it whenever you need to. And I remember pressing it over and over and over again and still being in lots of pain. And they propped me up in an armchair and for the first time. And I just remember sitting there feeling like I wanted to just, you know, be anywhere else than where I was and be anyone else than who I was. And my parents came in, and I barely remember seeing them and talking to them. And first thing they told me was that the surgery was successful.
How did that feel when you heard that it was successful?
Despite all the pain that I was feeling, I was extremely happy inside. And I could see a little bit of the future and what was, you know, in store for me.
Mm.
One day the doctor came in. We had left on a walk through the hospital like we did every day. And We came back and the doctor had written on the whiteboard, or actually a nurse had written on the whiteboard, Dr. Burkhart stopped in to say hello. He says you're more than likely to go home tomorrow.
How important were those daily walks for you?
They were really important because despite all the pain that I was in walking and being upright, I remember walking through a hallway with lots of windows and the sunshine was coming in and I could see plants and people and cars and it's amazing how just seeing that can make you so happy.
It felt good to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
How much do we take for granted?
We take a lot for granted. There's so many things that I could tell you I was so grateful to see when I got home. You know, just things like my house, my kitchen sink, the couches, the windows, just that everything to me was home and I was so happy to be home. And
now you're home. Now what happens?
Well, every day I was supposed to be taking walks and getting not too much exercise, but enough that I could heal properly. And by the time that I could, jog around the house or jump on the trampoline, I noticed that my leg was hurting a lot, and my calf, to be specific. And
that wasn't supposed to be happening.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be happening. But at the same time, I felt like, oh, I must still be healing. Everything's fine. Mm. And everything wasn't fine. It was lingering far longer than I expected it to. And the minor depression that I was experiencing was drawing straight from that. It was like my life was on pause. I couldn't do the things I wanted to do, the things I loved. And it almost felt like it would never end.
And what did they find out? What was the problem?
The problem was where the heart-lung machine had gone into my artery. When it had come back out, some scar tissue had formed. And so blood wasn't getting to the muscles in my calf. And that's where I was experiencing the pain. I was all geared up for surgery already. You kind of have this like peaking point where you're ready to have surgery, and once it's over, you're kind of ready for it to be done. And it wasn't done. It lingered out because of my leg hurting, and I couldn't be in a few plays that I wanted to be in. And
which was one of your real loves in life.
One of my passions is acting, and I couldn't be in a couple plays. And in one of the plays, I was the lead, and I was so excited to be the lead, and I couldn't participate in it. And a lot of my hair actually was falling out too, and I'd been growing it out for a long time, so it was actually more personal than you'd think.
It's safe to say then that things weren't going your way at all.
Mm-mm.
Was that hard on you emotionally?
Really hard on me emotionally. I'd wake up every day and basically just wonder when it's all going to end, when I'm going to be able to get back to my life and do the things I love and be the person I wanted to be.
So Natalie, these moments are not going the way you expected. It's a dark time in your life. What inspired you during your darkest moment?
Well, I actually have a song that I love. It's Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. And I have some lyrics here if you don't mind me sharing some.
Please do.
Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God, he to rescue me from danger interposed his precious blood. Let thy goodness, like a fetter, bind my wandering heart to thee. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart, O take and seal it for thy courts above. That song means a lot to me. I feel like I can relate to it quite a bit. I feel like I did, before my surgery, I did have a wandering heart. I didn't know what I wanted to be or who I even was. And I feel like my surgery kind of just handed my heart over to the Lord for him to seal to him forever. And that's why it's been really inspiring for me.
And having that lift you and carry you and help you through it, how have you felt the love of your Heavenly Father through this process?
besides having the surgery be successful, I've had a really strong peace of mind throughout this whole process, and which is a lot, you know, a huge blessing for me being the child of a big worrier. I'm also a huge worrier, and I think that was a huge blessing for me, is that I just was so at peace with the whole thing.
Now, in preparing for this interview, I spoke with your mother, and she described for me kind of a unique thing that happened to you as a teenager. In the summer before the surgery started, before you even found out you had this heart problem, you decided to do something kind of unique with all of this media that we have, all of the electronics that we have. Tell us what you did.
I gave my cell phone to my mom, and I turned off my Facebook for the summer.
And why? Why did you do that?
I felt like I needed to take a break from friends and from all the chaos that comes along with Facebook and texting. And I just felt like I needed to take a break from my school life, basically.
So...
Help me, social life.
Because I'm older, so help me understand this a bit. There's a bit of social pressure for you as a teenager with all of these media outlets and these processes. There's also something to try to keep up with it. And you found that just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that extremely overwhelming. I felt like I needed to take a break from that so I could really discover who I was, and then maybe come back to it with a better understanding of life and who I was, basically.
And did you do that on your own? Was that your decision to make? You decided to do that on your own?
Yeah, I was.
That's pretty unique.
Thank you.
So, Natalie, you mentioned that these electronics, your cell phone, the Facebook account, and these things that we look at relatively innocently, and we think, you know, it's just part of our society today, and there are good aspects of it that keep us connected with people we love and that sort of thing. But you say you felt that it was becoming overwhelming. Tell us how and why and what way it was becoming overwhelming to you.
Well, with Facebook, for example, I was always wondering if someone sent me a message or if there was a notification that I needed to check. And as silly as that sounds, it really was that way. It was kind of clouding my mind in a little bit, in a way. Mm-hmm. And I kind of figured that without those two things, I could think a lot clearer.
Can a teenager get obsessed with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with texting, you know, you have your phone on vibrate, and every time it vibrates, you check your phone. And
yeah, who's talking to me?
Yeah.
And how did you realize, what got you to a point that made you realize you were obsessed with it?
Well, I cared a lot more about my Facebook and my cell phone than I did about my family and my friends and, you know, the gospel and my grades. And like I've said before, I'm a big worrier. And the extra stress of having a Facebook and a cell phone just like completely overloaded me. Mm. And that's how I knew I needed a break from it. So for a long time in junior high, I had a really hard time with peer pressure. And when I say that, I mean it. Anything that my friends did, I thought I had to do. And I almost didn't even realize that I was being pressured into the things I was doing. I was just doing them because I felt like, you know, that was the cool thing to do or whatever. There's actually a picture frame in my bathroom on the wall that says, "Life is not about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself." I strongly believe that. I think you don't just wake up one day and say, "Oh my gosh, I know who I am." I think each day is like a building block. You're building yourself every single day. And I finally realized that I obviously wasn't making good decisions, and I didn't like who I was. I didn't like who I was becoming.
Was there a single moment where you remember that it was vivid, or was it sort of a gradual process?
It was definitely a gradual process. It was like each day hit me harder. I tried to visualize what my future would be like, and it wasn't what I wanted.
So you have all this pressure going on, mm-hmm. and you're feeling a bit overwhelmed with it. And you make this decision to put all of those things aside. How did that feel when you did that?
I felt refreshed, renewed, like I was almost starting over, and it felt really good.
This is a bit rhetorical, and it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but do young people think deeply?
Yeah, I think young people definitely think deeply, especially when they're assigned trials. I think that's part of the reason the Lord gives us trials sometimes. It's kind of a way to say, hey, take a look at your life, you know, take a look at where it's going, take a look at the decisions you're making. And I think trials almost force us to think deeply about things.
Natalie, as we've been talking today, the thought keeps going through my mind that you sort of had this interesting thing taking place. You had this emotional heartbreak, this emotional thing happening to your heart. At the same time, unknown to you, your physical heart was also in a broken state. And it's interesting to me that as you're going through this process, you recognize the fact that you need to get yourself back on course. And that's a wonderful thing to be astute enough to understand that I need to make some course changes here. So you're doing that. You're making these changes. At the same time, this heart is going to have surgeons come in and fix this heart. All of that in mind, have you thought deeper? Have you considered in a deeper way what it means when the Savior says that he'll heal the brokenhearted?
Well, yes, of course, because he has healed my heart emotionally and physically. I've never really thought about him healing both, you know, in both ways like that before.
What does that tell you about the heart of the Savior, that he would be willing to do that for you individually as an individual?
Well, I don't know if there are words for that, for how you could describe the Savior's heart.
Natalie, you're young. You have your whole life ahead of you. How has this experience, both the emotional change of heart and the physical change of heart, how has that affected your outlook on life and life's real meaning?
I have a better perspective for everything around me, so I enjoy the simple things that I wouldn't have enjoyed. Besides true happiness being the gospel, I believe that true happiness is the simple things in life. I think when you finally discover that the simple things are all you really need to be happy, I think that's when you also truly become happy. True happiness is eating toast with my mom in the morning and watching my little brother get baptized and getting a letter from my brother on a mission. When you really realize that the things you've had with you all along are the things that make you happy, I know now that choosing the right and living the gospel is really what makes you happy. And I think sometimes people search for things. Of course, they search for things to make them happy, like worldly things. And when you finally realize that what makes you happy are the things that are all around you, I think that's also when you become truly happy. And every day was a challenge. Waking up was a challenge. Getting out of bed was a challenge. I think some people believe that enduring it well, you have to get up and put a smile on your face and be happy, and I think sometimes it's okay to cry. Part of the process is letting yourself cry sometimes and letting yourself feel bad because you have to let it out sometime, and I think that helps with getting back into the groove of things. Suddenly you realize how beautiful life is, and it helps you realize those things. You can't rise until you fall, so you have to, you know, be at your lowest point to be super happy again.
Natalie, you even had a moment where you said, I'd be good to stay, and I'm okay with going. You know, there's that real threat that maybe I may not wake up from this surgery. Looking back at your challenge and everything you've been through, what have you really learned through all of this unexpected trial?
True happiness is living the gospel. Of course, when you're in the middle of trials, they always seem looming and unconquerable. But if you have a positive and eternal perspective about it, then I think everything's always going to turn out okay if you have that right state of mind. And I think once they're over, you're extremely grateful for them. And I think they always change you no matter who you are. And I think they change you for the better. And you'll always be grateful for the experience. My perspective of life is definitely more positive. Life seems so much more beautiful to me. And I know now that true happiness is living the gospel. And if you have the right perspective, then trials are blessings. And I just have a completely different perspective.
This has been Enduring It Well with host W.A. Christensen, presented by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.